All right. You know, Rabotai, when I was a boy in the shtetl, we did not have these winter advisories or watches. You know what? Whatever the weather was, we may do. It didn't paralyze people for 48 hours ahead of time, and that was it. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, perfect. Absolutely. All right. Rabotai, let's begin. It didn't have supermarkets, but all right. So let's begin. So today's daf is Kuf Yud Dalid 114. So we are going to pick up. We left off with the last two lines of Kuf Yud. Last two lines. So Rav Yitzchak Bar Bisna. So we say, thank you very much. Perfect. Rav Yitzchak Bar Bisno, Irkusule Maftechei Debei Midrasha Bushzam. So this is actually an interesting case. So Rav Yitzchak Bar Bisno lost the keys to the Beis Medrash in the Rishus HaRabim. He lost the keys. So what happens now? Remember, this was on Shabbos. So of course, the issue is that even if he were to find the keys, how would he be able to go ahead and bring them back? So what happened? Asukam mit Rabbi Pedas. He came up for Rabbi Pedas, Amrle, and Rabbi Pedas gave him the following advice. Zil tap of kof yud dalet. Zil divar tali vitalyo. Vilatailu hasam. Di imashke chiluhu. So Rabbi Pedas said, here's what you should do. Take a group of boys and girls and go and take them to play in Rosh Hashanah. And if they find the keys, then what? Then they will go ahead and end up carrying it back themselves. Alma Kasavar, therefore it is good that Rabbi Pedas holds, katan ochal nevelos ain basin mitzuvin lafrisho. That if a katan is eating literally nevelos, he's not kosher food. A katan is eating non-kosher food, that Bezdin is not obligated to step in and try to stop him. Now I will say, the fact that Rabbi Pedas says, let them play, and if they find the keys, they'll bring it back, indicates that even if the katan is mechalal Shabbos, does melacha, so it's okay. You know, whatever. We don't stop that from occurring. Okay, so therefore Rabbi Pedas holds, and Rabbi says, just this phrase over here, of katan ochel nevelos in bezim mitzuvin lafrisho, this becomes like the phrase, the catchphrase, for that if a katan is doing, some child is doing something wrong, so again, when we say something wrong, we mean like violating a particular avera, ben adam lechavero, ben adam lemakom, not ben adam lechavero. I was saying a very important, you know, they once asked the Chafetz Chaim, why is it, you know, when little boys start to learn Gemara, so they always learn Bava Metzia. Those are Eila Metzias, right? So why, you know, anyone who has a son who started to learn Eila Metzias has these thoughts that, oh my gosh, you know, the kid is breaking his teeth on Eila Metzias. He's a little kid. Why do this? So it's interesting. Chafetz Chaim says, very important, because Eila Metzias is all about what? Is all about how you treat your friend's property. And one of the most important things that we try to instill from our children from a young age is respect for the other, and to show them that Judaism has a preoccupation with respect for the other. So when we speak about this idea that if a katan is committing an avera, we don't intervene, this is talking about averos bin adam lemakom. Say he's eating non-kosher food. He's carrying something in Rosh Hashanah. So Rabbi Pedas apparently holds that lamaisa, if this was happening, we would not be obligated to stop him from doing it. Let's bring a brisa that supports this. Lo yomer adam latino chavili mafteach chavili chosam. A person should not tell his child on Shabbos, bring me my keys, meaning in a way that would require hotzah, carrying on Shabbos, or chosam. Chosam means my signet. Ella manicho v'tolish, manicho v'zorek. But rather, again, if something is on the ground and the katan by himself picks it up, tolish literally means like uproots something, or the child throws something on his own, that's his own prerogative. So again, you see from here, I can't go ahead and tell my child to do something. So remember, I leave the light on in the bedroom on Shabbos, right? So I can't tell Chaimke, do me a favor and shut off the light. Tati, I learned in yeshiva, you can't do that. No, don't worry about it. I really need to sleep, right? So that you can't do. You can't go ahead and explicitly tell a child to do that. But if the child does it on their own, then it's not a problem. This is according to Rabbi Pedas. Amr Abaye says, Tolish, so Abaye redefines the case. And he says, no, what's the situation over here? Tolish ba'atzit she'enu nakov, zorek ba'karmelis terabanan. So Abaye says, no. What was the case where we allow the child to uproot something from the ground? That's talking about atzit she'enu nakov. Atzit she'enu nakov means a non-perforated flower pot. If you have something growing in a non-perforated flower pot, so to uproot from that on Shabbos is only asur min derabanan. Why? Because it's not connected to the ground. Or where is the case the child is throwing? In a karmelis. Where we learn this in Shabbos. So a karmelis is an area that resembles Rosh Hashanah, but is not actually a biblical public domain. So in other words, what Abaye is qualifying is that yes, if we see a child doing something usr, we will not intervene as long as what? It is only an Issa D'Rabbanan. But if it is an Issa D'Oraisa, Abaye apparently holds that no, we would actually intervene and stop the child from doing it. Tashma, Ovid Shokochavim Shebalachabos. If a non-Jew comes, this was another fire case. A non-Jew comes along to go ahead and put out a fire on Shabbos. This is a fire in a house of a Jew. Remember, we saw Masech Shabbos already, that if a fire Chas V'Shalom breaks out of my house on Shabbos, I am assuming the only danger is a danger to property, I am not permitted to put out that fire on Shabbos. Because remember, the act of putting out a fire ultimately is a melacha, it's mechaba. I can't do that. Obviously, this does not really apply in a contemporary context because we have electric lines, we have gas lines, so every single fire is considered to be a sakana. But you can imagine, times of the Gemara, person lived out in a rural area. So again, if my house caught on fire, the next house is not for another, whatever it is, half a mile. So right, if it burns down, it burns down. I'm going to lose property, but it's not going to be any kind of loss of life. So I have to let it burn down. So what happens if a non-Jew shows up? My non-Jewish neighbor shows up and to go ahead and put out the fire. Ein omrim lo kave, v'al techabe, mipnei she'en shivisas aleim. So I can't tell the Gentile to put it out, but I also what? I also don't have to tell him not to put it out. So if he's going ahead and he starts putting it out on his own, that's his own prerogative, because I am not obligated, I am not commanded regarding his Shabbos observance, because obviously he doesn't have an obligation to observe Shabbos. So if he wants to go ahead and put it out, that's his business. Katan abal lechabos. But if my child comes along, or a Jewish child comes along to put out the fire, Omrim lo, we say to him, Al tichabe. We say to that child, do not put it out. Sheshvisaso aleihem. Why? Because at the end of the day, the shvisa, the resting on Shabbos of that child, is upon me. So you see from here that what? That you cannot allow a child to go out and do malacha on Shabbos. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, what's it? So we'll say, remember, this contradicts Rabbi Pedas, because Rabbi Pedas seemed to be of the opinion that a child, if a child is doing malacha, we don't, the Beis Din means we don't have to go out and stop the child from doing it. Yet here, if the child shows up and begins putting out the fire, we have to tell the child to stop doing it. So Rabbi Yochanan, no, it's not a contradiction. Ba'ose al das aviv. He's doing it, this is the case over here, is where he's doing it with the consent of his father. Now, what does it mean, Abose? Look at Rashi. Ba'ose al das aviv. Sha'tinok tsofe ba'aviv. The child looks at his father. Ve'roa shenoach lo bekach. And he sees that his father is happy that he's doing it. Va'aviv omed alav. And the father is standing right there. Because in that case, Rabosai, where the father's standing right there, and the father's like, he's nodding his head, he's approving of it. So that is as if the father himself is telling the child to do that. So that you can't do. But if the child was doing it on his own, without any parental input, then Einach Nami would be permitted. Because after all, in this kind of case, if a non-Jew were doing it, and same thing over here, same thing where the Jew is going ahead and standing there and clearly happy with the Gentile's actions, would the Gentile be permitted to put out the fire? To which the Gemara says, yes, and I'll tell you why. Ovid kochavim adaite denafshi ovid. The Bible says a very important yisod. The assumption is that whenever a Gentile does something, he always does it for his own purposes. Now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Ovid kochavim adaite denafshi ovid. Afilu below yidias Yisrael. If the non-Jew shows up, and he's putting out the fire, so who is he doing that for? He's not doing it for me, right? Who is he doing it for? He's doing it for himself. Now, why is he doing it for himself? Because he knows at the end of the day, what's going to happen after Shabbos? I'm going to pay him. Of course I'm going to pay him. I have incredible gratitude that he came, that he did something. So the idea over here, the Gemara is saying is, with the Ovid Kochavim, with the non-Jew, so even if I'm standing there and even if he sees that clearly, I'm happy with what it is that he's doing, at the end of the day, there is, like most people in life, we all have, most of us have utilitarian motivations in whatever it is that we do. So again, we assume that he's doing it, Adaita Dinav, it's a very important yesod. Adaita Dinav, he's doing it for himself. Therefore, even if the Yisrael is happy that he's doing it, we don't assume that he's doing it on behalf of the Yisrael, he's doing it on behalf of himself. On the other hand, the beautiful part about children is that often children want to do things only for what purpose? Mamish, to please their parents. The truth is, we know psychologically that doesn't even change all that much as we grow up either, right? The desire and the want to please one's parents is exceptionally strong. So therefore, again, if the child sees that the father is standing there and the father is going ahead and, you know, happy with it, then the katan's doing it on his own, that would be problematic. Tashma. So I must say, we're still locked in this discussion. So on one hand, we have Rabbi Padas, who says that if a child is engaging in prohibited activity, you don't have to stop the child from doing it. Abaye so far qualified it as what? As only dealing with dinei d'rabbanon. So Tashma, ben chaver sharagel yalech etzel avi imos is an interesting case. So let's see, you have the son of a chaver. So a chaver is someone who's a talmud chacham, who is very careful with the laws of tum and tara. So let's say you have the son of a chaver who went, shragalelich etzel avi imo, who went to his maternal grandfather, who is an Ama Aretz. So the maternal grandfather is an Ama Aretz. Now both say, again, not just Tumantara, also with tithing, Trumas and Maestras. So let's say again, so you have the son of the chaver, went to his maternal grandfather, and maternal grandfather is an Ama Aretz. So therefore what? He's not careful with Truman Meiser. So what's the halacha? So we're not concerned that the grandfather is going to feed his grandson untithed produce, because since the grandfather knows that the grandson, that his son-in-law, that his daughter are very careful with tithing, therefore make sure to feed his grandson the right thing. Let's say again the grandson comes back to his own home with fruits from his grandfather. The father does not have to take away those fruits. Under normal circumstances, we would say, what do you do with the produce of an Ama Aretz? It's Dimai. It's Dimai, right? Remember, it's questionable produce. So normally you have to tithe it again before taking part of it. And yet we see over here that what? That Lamaisa, we let the kid eat the produce, even though what? Even though it's Dimai. To which the Gemara says, Am Rabbi Yochanan, b'dimai hikilu. No, so okay. Remember, Rabbi, this goes back to what Abaye said before also, that Dimai is Dirabanan. So when it comes to Dirabanans, we're a little bit more lenient. Ela time of the demayu. So the only now what you're telling me is the only reason we let the kid eat the produce is because it's demay ha vadai ba la sure. But yet again, if it was not demay, but it was definitely untithed produce, what do you see from here? That you would not let the kid eat it without first tithing it. Now I will say, so what does that show you? What that shows you ultimately is that lemaisa, we don't let a child go ahead and just simply violate something that is prohibited. Rabbi Yochanan said, no, in that case, ba'osa al das aviv. But yet in that case, Rabbi Yochanan was the one who qualified the case that lemaisa, again, that was a situation where he was doing it with the consent of his father. Look at Rashi. Vam Rabbi Yochanan, le'el ba'osa al das aviv. Even Rabbi Yochanan, who said before that in the case of the putting out of the fire, that we didn't want the katan to put out the fire. Why? Because it was clear that he was doing it with the consent of his father. In this case over here, there's no consent of his father. Ella, Rabbi Yochanan sapuke misafkele. Rather, Rabbi Yochanan, what it comes down to is this: Rabbi Yochanan himself was unsure about whether or not we are obligated to go ahead and separate a katan when a katan is doing something prohibited. And therefore, what happened? Kai hacha madchi. Therefore, I will say, whenever Rabbi Yochanan was faced with the proof in one direction or another, he always brought some type of refutation for that proof. In other words, that because Rabbi Yochanan was unsure about what the halacha was, he saw the merits and he saw the holes in both sides of the argument. Tashma, another case. Ben Chaver Kohen, Sheragal Yalech Eitzel Avi Imo Kohen, Kohen Ama Aretz. So let's say you have the son, the father is a Chaver Kohen. So he's someone who's careful with the laws of Tum and Tara, Shumas and Maestras, and he's a Kohen. And the grandson, this son, went to his grandfather, who's also a Kohen, but he's an Ama Aretz. Ama Aretz Kohen. So in Choshishin, Shema Yachilenu Truma Temeya, so we don't have to be concerned that the grandfather, Kohen Ama Aretz, is going to feed his grandson, Truma Temeya. However, Matzabiyad Aperos, let's say grandson comes home from his grandfather's house with fruit in his hand, ain't zakoklo, we don't have to worry, you don't have to take it away, because we don't have to be concerned that what? That maybe that fruit is truma tamea. So you see from here again that what? That if a child is doing something that is prohibited, that we don't have an obligation to separate him from it. To which the Gemara says, no, again, bitruma dirabanan. No, what's the case? The case over there is with truma dirabanan. And therefore, Gemara says, so all we've established is that when it comes to rabbinic prohibitions, we don't have to separate the child from engaging in them. Tashma. Yonek is actually an interesting case. Yonek tinok vaholech me'avodos kochavim umibehema tmeya. So a Jewish child can nurse from a non-Jewish wet nurse or from a non-kosher animal. Ve'in choshishin, and we are not worried. Ve'in choshishin biyonek sheketz, and we don't count that as if the child is ingesting something impure into their body. Velo yachilenu nevelos utrefos shkatsim v'ramasim, but you should not feed the child nevelos trefos. I will say, so nevela again is an animal that dies without proper shchita. Trefa is an animal that dies as a result of some type of sickness. Shkatsim ramasim, creepy crawly things. Umikulan yonik mehem va'afilu b'shabbos, and a child could nurse, a baby can nurse from all of these things, even on Shabbos. We'll discuss all of these cases. U'begadol, now we'll say, in this case, a gadol doesn't mean an adult. A gadol means a toddler. Tinok means an infant. Gadol means a toddler, an older child, aser. Abishol, Omer Abishol says, no'agin hayinu sheyonkim mibehima tahora biyamtiv. This is interesting. So Abba Shaul says, we used to nurse from a behema tahora on Yom Tov. All right, so let's analyze this. Katani miha, ein choshishin biyonek sheketz. So Abba says, listen to this. Now, what comes out from here? Now, again, remember, this is not really our sugya, but the one thing that does come out from here is that a child is nursing from an impure source, and yet what? And yet what? We don't say anything. Now, we'll say, now remember, the Shulchan Aruch does bring down that halacha lemaisa, if a mother can't nurse her child and she hires a wet nurse, actually the halacha is that it's preferable not to use a non-Jewish wet nurse. A person should not use a non-Jewish wet nurse. It's actually fascinating. The Shulchan Aruch brings this down. Where do we know this from? It's actually quite amazing. From Moshe Rabbeinu. That the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu would not nurse from a Jewish woman, So too, again, if possible, if a person needs to hire a wet nurse, should not be a non-Jewish woman. There's a beautiful maestro, Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. He said that. We'll save it for later. So the maestro says the following: Mia in choshish and biyonik. So therefore, again, so that I understand. But even if a child nurses from a behema tmeya, so again, child literally suckles right from a non-kosher animal. So you see that again, even though that's non-kosher milk, it's objectively non-kosher milk. So the maisa again, we don't worry about it. Hasam ishum sakana. No, you can't bring a raya from that case. The reason why that's so, the Gemara is bringing this as a proof to Rabbi Pedas's idea that lemaisa we don't separate a child from engaging in prohibited activity. To which the Gemara says, you can't bring a raya from this case. This case is different. Why? Because sakana, the baby needs to eat. Obviously, if you're doing this kind of stuff, it means that the baby needs to eat. Baby needs to eat. That's a sakana. Ihachi gadol nami. I don't say, well, if you're talking about sakana, then why do you make a distinction between a baby and a toddler? Sakana is sakana, sakana. Let the toddler go ahead and drink as well. To which the Gemara answers, gadol boy umdina. A gadol requires evaluation. Meaning when it comes to a toddler, we want to first evaluate the state of the toddler, then we'll decide if a toddler could drink or not. Katan nami libayum. Then I don't say, so why don't you do the same evaluation by a katan as well? So Rav Huna said the name of Yoshua, that lemaisa stam tinok, a regular child, is mesukan, is considered to be in a state of sakana if he does not get milk. Abba Shaul Omer, no'agin hayinu sheyonkim mibehema tor biyamtiv. So Abba Shaul said, we used to go ahead and literally nurse from a kosher animal on Yom Tov. Hechidami. Now, what exactly is the case over here? Now, I will say, just to give a little bit of background over here. So you are not allowed to milk an animal on Shabbos. Not milk an animal on Shabbos. It is the malacha of dush. It's the malacha of threshing. Any time that you extract liquid from something in which it is absorbed. So lemaisa again, that is an issue of dush. The truth is, under certain circumstances, it applies to nursing as well. A mother, of course, can nurse her child. That's not a problem. For example, expressing milk into a bottle to give to a child is usur on Shabbos. That you cannot do. A child can nurse directly, but a mother cannot express milk into a bottle on Shabbos. That ultimately, again, is the malach of dosh. So remember, that's the back. The told over here is what's called mefarik. So the Gemara is asking, he's like this, how are you able to do this? Hey, chidami, if there's sakana for the child, afilu b'shabbos nami, then why is the dispensation, or why is the license limited to Yom Tov? Should be permitted on Shabbos also. V'id like a sakana, if there's no sakana, afilu b'yom tov asr, then even on Yom Tov it's asr. Lo tzricha, di'ika tzara. Oh, what's the case of Yerabosai? Where, again, there's not sakana, but there's tzar. They're sar, the child is sar. The kasavar mefari kila achar yad, mefari kila achar yad. So therefore, again, this act, this type of getting milk out of the animal by essentially nursing from the udder of the animal, one could posit is a shinui, right? Something, not something you see every day. And therefore, the mice, again, it's a shinui. Because it's a shinui, on Shabbos, the iser skila, on Shabbos, where milking the animal itself, for let's say, for my own use, would go ahead and carry with it an Isra Skila. Gaz Rabbanan, the rabbi said you couldn't do it. Yom Tov de Isra Lav, but on Yom Tov, where it's not an Isra Skila, it's only a prohibition, lo Gaz Yubi Rabbanan, and essentially, if you milk the animal with a Shinui, which again, essentially is if a human being nurses from the animal, that's a Shinui, in Shinui Gidol Mizo, then ultimately, that becomes permitted on Yom Tov. Tashma, lo Socham, so we'll say the Pasuk over here says, lo sochlum ki sheketzein. This is talking about, again, the prohibition to eat things that creep and crawl on the ground. So you can't eat them ki sheketz because they are disgusting. So the Gemara says, don't read it as lo sochlum, but rather lo sochilum. Do not feed them to others, teaching us lahasir gedolim ala ketanim, to teach us that a parent may not feed his child shkatzim. Shkatzim, right? Creepy, crawly things. Shkatzim v'ramosim. So what do you see from here? My love, da'amr lohu lo sochlu. Does this not mean that if a parent sees a child picking up a creepy, crawly thing and about to eat it, the parent has to say, don't eat that? The parent is obligated to stop their child from eating it? Lo, de'lo leisvulei bi'adayim. No, what it means is you can't give it to your child with your hands. Meaning that you can't encourage your child to eat it. But if the child is eating it on their own, then what? Then, again, we're not talking about alts parenting over here, right? We're just talking about alts halacha. So, again, if it's a lot of protein, right? So the idea of it is if I see the child doing it, so I can't, as a parent, I can't facilitate my child doing something prohibited. But if my child is doing something prohibited, I don't have to go ahead and stop the child from doing it. And I will say, we'll see the halacha lamais of this, which is quite interesting. So the Gemara says the following, Tashma, kol nefesh mikem lo soch al dam. So the Pasuk says, all every soul among you shall not eat blood. Teaches us, lahaz yagidolam ala ketanim. Teach us that the parents are responsible for the children. My love, da'amilahu lo sochlu. Doesn't that mean that parents have to tell the child, you cannot eat blood? Lo, de'lo leisvulahu bi'adayim. No, rather it means that the parent can't actively give the child blood. Tashma, Amar, Emor, ve'amarta, right? The Pasuk says, by the beginning of Emor, by telling the Kohanim they cannot become Tomei. Why does it use the double lashon of Emor, ve'amarta, say and say, lahasir gidolam ala ketanim, that the adult Kohanim have to be vigilant regarding the children Kohanim. My love, da'amri lehu lo titmu, is it not that the parents are telling the children, you may not become Tomei? The Gemara says, lo, delo litmu lahem bi'adayim. Rather, it means that what? That the parents can't actively defile the children. So we'll say we have three examples now. We have three examples. Shkatzim, dam, and tumah. And in all three of these cases, what we see is that the extent of parental responsibility is that the parent cannot facilitate the actual performance of the prohibited activity. I can't give my child the sherets to eat. I can't give my kid the dam, and I can't take my child from a Kohen to Druid Hill, the one over here on Park Heights Cemetery. Druid Ridge, right? And I can't take my child to the cemetery. Right? So those are the three things. Now we've expressed that in three different ways. So we'll say, so it's Rihi. Why do I need all three cases to teach me the same thing? The Iashmo in Shkatzim, because had it just taught me the case of Shkatzim, I would have assumed Mishum da Asirin Bemashu. Because we also remember in the case of Shkatzim, the shear for a sheket is even a mashu, even any amount. Aval dam da'i'ad di'ika revias. But perhaps dam which has a shear, perhaps again there's no problem with the child having it. V'yashmo inan dami shom de'ika kares. And if it would have just told me the prohibition of dam, I would have said that's a case where parents are obligated to make sure their children don't violate because there's an iser kares. Aval shrotzim, but by a sheretz, consumption of a sheretz, which only carries a lav. Emalo, perhaps parents are not responsible. V'yashmo inan hani tarti mishum da sirin shave bekol. And if it would have just told me the case of dam and sheretz, because that prohibition applies to everyone. However, aval tuma emalo. But by tumor, the prohibition does not apply to everyone, perhaps not. And if it would have just told me the case of tumah, I would have said kohanim shiny. Kohanim are different. Why? Mishum deriba bahen mitzvos yiseros. Because the Torah goes ahead and Torah gives many additional mitzvos to the kohanim. Aval hani. But in these other cases, perhaps not, therefore tzicha. So we'll say, again, even though all three cases seem to be espousing the same principle, which they are, lemaisi, you still need all three, because each case has some unique aspect. Tashma. So we'll say, now we're back a little bit, just for a moment, to Yibumun Chalitza, but it's still in the same sugi of Katan. Tashma, shnei achin, echad pikeach, ve'echad cheresh. So I'll say, if you have two brothers, one is a pikeach and one is a cheresh, nisuin shtei achayos pikeach pikchos, who are married to two pikeach sisters, two competent sisters, meis cheresh ba pikachas. And now the husband of the cheresh, the cheresh husband, remember, both brothers, two brothers, one is a pikach, one is a cheresh. So the cheresh brother dies, and his pikachas wife now falls to his pikach brother. So ma yase pikach ba pikachas. So what should the surviving pikach brother who is married to the pikachas do? There's nothing to do in that case. Teitze mishum achos isha, his cheresh sister-in-law will not have to do yibum or chalitza. Why? Because lemaisa, she is the sister of his current wife. Therefore, she's an erva to his current wife. And therefore, again, what? Nothing. Teitze below klum, she doesn't have to do anything. However, on the other hand, meis pikeach ba pikachas. However, again, if the pikeach husband, who is the husband of the pikachas, dies, ma yaaseh cheresh ba pikachas, so what should the surviving cheresh brother do? So what does he have to do? Motzias ishto beget. So he has to divorce his wife, his pikeach wife with a get. Now we'll say why. Remember, we've had this case before. Because lemaisa, remember, again, in this case, the zeka of yibum is stronger than his actual marriage. Because his marriage is only dirabanan, he's a cheresh. The zeka of yibum, however, is an extension of his brother's marriage. His brother was a pikeach, married to pikachas. So there's a biblical zeka that's coming up against a rabbinic marriage. Therefore, the first step is he has to dissolve the rabbinic marriage. So he divorces his wife. However, again, Moses ishto beget, ve'eshes achiv asru li'olam. Now, we'll say, interestingly enough, at that point in time, the sister-in-law, the pikachas, becomes asur. Why? Because she is the sister of his divorcee, which prevents yibum from occurring. So we'll say, remember, we saw that wording in the Mishnah, of I lo li ishto, I lo li yivimto. This is one of these catch 22 cases where he doesn't end up with either of the women. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Am I motis ishto beget? Why is he obligated to go ahead and divorce his chareshes wife with a get? His wife is a pikeach. He's the chareshes. He's the chereish. Why is he obligated to divorce her? Tesev gabe, katan ochal nevelosu. I will say, a chereish should be no worse than what? Then a katan ochal nevelos. And just like we go ahead and we let the katan go ahead and eat the non-kosher food and we don't stop him from doing it, so too this cheresh should be able to continue to live with his wife. To which the Gemara says, Mishum Isura Dida. You're right. The issue is not him. The issue is that logic works fine to allow the continuation of this union for him. But what? There's another person involved in the marriage. It's the woman. And for her, this relationship becomes prohibited. Therefore, that's why he has to divorce her with a get. Tashma, plus another case. Shnei achin pichin nisuin shtei achayos. Two pikeach brothers are married to two sisters. Achas pikeachos v'achas chareshes. One is a pikeach and one is a chareshes. And what happens? So we'll say again, in this case, both brothers are pikchin, sisters, one pikachas, one chareshes, meis pikach bal chareshes. If the brother who was married to the chareshes dies, so what happens? Ma yase pikach bal pikachos. What should the surviving brother do? So that's not a problem, because we'll say in this case, teitze mishum achos isha. In this case, the chereish widow simply goes out without yibam or chalitza, because she is the sister of his already established wife. On the other hand, meis pikeach ba pikachos. On the other hand, again, if the pikeach the pikeach, who is the bal pikachas, dies. So what happens in this case? Ma yaaseh pikeach bal chareshes. So what should the pikeach, who is the husband of the chareshes, do? Suppose I say same thing. Motzias ishto beget. So in this case, remember, the zeka is stronger than the marriage. Therefore, he has to divorce his wife. Ve'eshes achiv bechalitza, and he does chalitza with his sister-in-law. Ve'amai motzias ishto beget. But why does he have to go ahead and divorce his wife with the get? Tesef gabe, she's a chareshes. Let her stay in the marriage. After all, she's no worse than what? Katan ochel nevelosu. To which the Gemara says, you're right, except mishum isura didei. Both the same thing we said before. You're right, the issue is not by the chereish or chareshes. The chereish and chareshes are always fine. The issue is with what? The other competent party who will have a prohibition remaining in this relationship. Oh, Rabbi, let's have one more case. Tashma, shnei achin, echad chereish ve'echad bikeach. Two brothers, one is a chereish and one is a bikeach. So what happens? Nisuin l'shtei achayos. We're married to two sisters. Achas pikachos v'achas chareshes. So let's say the assumption over here is chereish brother married chereish sister. Pikeach brother married pikeach sister. So what happened? Meis chereish bal chareshes. So if the chereish brother died and his chareshes wife falls for yibum, so ma yaseh pikeach ba pikachas. This is easy. Teitzem yishum achos yishla. So in this case over here, if the chereish died and the chareshes widow falls to the pikeach who is married to the pikachas, what happens? She goes out with nothing. No yibum nor chalitza because she is the sister of his already existing wife, and that's a biblical marriage. However, on the other hand, meis pikeach ba pikachas. Ma yaseh chereish ba chareshes. But Rabosei, let's say again, the pikeach brother dies and his pikachas wife falls to the chereish brother who is married to the chareshes. What should happen? Motzias ishto beget. So as we said before, he has to divorce his wife for the get. Because why? Because the zeka of the yibum is stronger than the marriage. He has to divorce his wife. The eishes achiv asura liolam, and his sister-in-law is asura forever because again, she is the wife of his divorcee. Correct. That's what it means, liolam. Liolam means as long as she's alive. V'ha'acha de'lav yisura di'da'ika, v'lav yisura di'de'ika, v'katani motis ishto beget. Oh, Rabbi Sevet, here we have a perfect case. Because also what happens in this case? He's a cheresh, and she's a chareshes. In this case, again, what? They should be permitted to remain together. Why? Because it should be no worse than the case of Katan Ochel Nevelos. So yet, why do we force him to divorce her? To which the Gemara answers, Amar Rav Shmaya Gizera Mishum Hataras Yevam Alashuk. You're right, this case is different. We have a concern over here of Hataras permitting a Yevam Alashuk. Now, I'll say, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Di Amiran Tesev Chareshes Gabi Chereish. If we would allow, in this case, the Chereish to remain married to his Chareshes wife, Lo yadi inshi de taima mishum katan ochal nevelosu. People will not realize that the reason we're allowing them to remain married together is because essentially they're like kitanim who are doing something that is prohibited, but we're not stopping them from doing it. And what will people assume? People will assume v'savri de kiddushin di day dochiluhu dochila lezeka de pikachas achosa. They will assume that the reason why the Cheresh and the Chareshes are still married because that marriage is stronger than the Zeka. The Ein Boal Achos Zikukaso Hilchach Asi Lemishri LaAchos LeShuk Kishar Achos Yishapat Rumas. We'll say what can happen if they see that the Cheresh is still living with the Chareshes. They assume that what? That therefore again the Pikeach wife can't do Yibam because the Cheresh is married to her sister, and they'll say that the marriage set aside any type of Zeka, and they're going to allow the Pikeach to go ahead and marry into what? Into the regular pool of people, which of course would be prohibited. Okay, Hajjun Allah, Chirish. We'll say, we'll have to find time. I can't do it now because we have to do a little bit more of the Gemara. But this sugya of Chirish Ochel Nevelos, Katan Ochel Nevelos, Mir Tashem. I'm going to wait for the next time we have a shorter daf, but I'm going to, maybe even tomorrow, we're going to try to come back to it, just to show you the Shulchan Aruch on it, because it's quite interesting. If a woman and her husband went overseas, and then I both say, what happens? She comes back alone, and she says he died. She says he died. Okay. So now the Shaila, of course, is believing her statement. So what happens? Then they, then they hear cries from inside the suitcase. But she says he died. So the Gemara says, under what circumstances can we believe her claim? So the Gemara says, number one, Shalom beino lebeino. If there was peace between husband and wife, meaning if they had what we call just like a harmonious relationship, V'shalom ba'olam. And there was peace in the world. Most of now we're going to see this is actually very important. Peace in the world means that there was not war. It wasn't wartime. So in this case, va'amra meis ba'ali, and she comes back and she says, my husband died. So tinase, we believe her. Meis ba'ali, or she says, my husband died. Tisyabim, she could do yibum. However, shalom, shalom, beino lebeino, or milchama ba'olam. But if there was peace in their marriage, but what? There was war going on. Or kitata beino lebeino v'shalom ba'olam. Or there was war in the house, but peace in the world. And ba'asa va'amra meis ba'ali. And she came and she said, my husband died. Eino ne'amenes. She is not believed. Rabbi Huda says, the olam eino ne'amenes. Ela imkein ba'asa u'bocha. U'bigadeha kiruin. Well, this is interesting. Rabbi Huda says that, look, if she comes back and she says, my husband died, and she's been crying, and her clothing is torn, so we believe her. In other words, we'll say it's actually very interesting that Rabbi Yehuda holds, she's got to look a little sad, right? If she's coming back, and she says, look, you know, my husband died, if we can get this done, I've got a date in about a half hour, you know, then that's a problem. She's got to, you know, she's got to look like she's in distress over the loss of her husband. Amrulo, the rabbi said to Rabbi Yehuda, no, achazuva achazu tinase. This is actually very interesting. The Rabbanon saying that no, she doesn't have to look like she's mourning. Well, it's actually very interesting. We'll see. There's a lot of psychology at play over here in terms of how people deal with loss. Rabbi Yehuda seems to be of the opinion that if the loss really hurts you, it has to manifest itself externally. The Rabbanon say the truth is we're not in the business of trying to figure out if people are really grieving or not grieving. That's an emotional discussion. We're trying to figure out what the halacha says. So let's analyze the Gemara. Says the Gemara, Tana Shalom Beino Lebeino, Mishum Dekabai Lemisne Kitata Beino Lebeino, Tana Shalom Ba'olam Mishum Dekabai Lemisne Milchama Ba'olam. Now, Bosan, it's actually very interesting. Now, what the Gemara points out of here is the following. So the Mishnah said that if there was peace, if there was Shalom, peace in their marriage. So we'll say, so now, how do you measure peace in marriage? To which the Gemara now explains, the only reason the Gemara wanted to use that Lashon of peace in their marriage is because the Mishnah needed to use that Lashon of Kitata. Kitata means struggle or conflict or strife. So the idea over here is actually very interesting. So what the Gemara is saying over here is, when it says that there was shalom in their marriage, the automatic assumption, the default position is, people have a good marriage. That's the default assumption. It's only once we see that there is kitata, if we see that there was strife, then we know there's not a good marriage. But meaning, I don't need proof that someone has a good marriage. The only reason the Gemara wrote that there's shalom between them is to contrast it with kitata. But meaning, kitata has to be proven. I have to see kitata. But the absence of kitata, if I don't know, the automatic assumption is that there was peace in their marriage. The same way Rabbi said that ultimately, peace in the world means what? The absence of regional war. That's what peace means. If there's no war, then by definition, that means peace. So Amar Rava, we'll say, let's go a little bit weiter. Amar Rava, my taima de mochama. Now we'll say, let's analyze this. So I understand. So according to the Mishnah, if a woman comes back and says that Lamaisa, my husband died while we were overseas, so I understand why, in order to believe her, there has to be peace in the marriage. Because if there wasn't peace in the marriage, maybe she has a motivation to lie. Not that she killed him, but she has a motivation to lie that her husband's gone because she just wants to move on. But who cares about whether there's war or peace in the world? So the Gemara is actually very interesting. Mishum da'amda bididami. I suppose, listen to this. Because it could happen that if there was conflict going on, then what happened? Let's say she saw her husband injured. She saw her husband injured, and she assumed that because there's war in the world, therefore what? He must have died. Look at Rashi. Bididami. Me'umad liba, she evaluated the circumstances and she reached a conclusion. Va'afagav de lo chazisi dimis, even though she never saw that he died. Ki depreciates the savra saka daitra becholhani deiktol hu polit pitmiya. So we'll say again. So let's say we're talking about a situation now where if there's war, he may have gotten injured, and she assumes that look, most people who get injured in war, or most people who would have gotten injured in this war, would die. So I, did you see him die? I didn't see him die. But the statistical probability is that he's dead. Saka daitra b'chol hani de'iktol hu palit. Because could it be, she says to herself, I saw that he was mortally injured, so could it be, if he was injured, is it possible that he escaped that? Of course, the answer is, he must have died. To which the Gemara says, Imtim Salomar, Kevan de Shalom Beino Lebeino, Notra ad dechazia. So I'll say, so maybe you'll say to yourself, well, if they're in a good marriage, most times if they're in a good marriage, if the husband sees her wife is her husband injured, she'll wait till what? She'll wait till he died before she goes back home, right? So okay, this is a different time. Okay, fine. So right, she'll wait to see what happens. So the Gemara says, no, zimnin, demacholi begira oberomcha, because it could be a situation where, God forbid, she saw him stabbed by a sword or by a spear, v'savra vadai meis, and she will assume that in such an injury, he's definitely going to die. But yet we know that what? V'ika, da'avit sasmari v'chaya. But yet we know that under certain circumstances, you could what? You could dress the wound, you could administer some type of first aid and kill him. Therefore, Abu Sai, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is something very, I'm sorry, and save him. Right. Don't administer first aid to kill him, administer first aid to save him. So I'll say, therefore, the Gemara says, it's very interesting. Therefore, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, the only way we could believe her is if there are two criteria. Number one, there's shalom in their marriage, because again, shalom in their marriage says that takes away any motivation for her to lie about her husband's death, and that there's peace in the world. Because if there's not peace in the world, if they were in an area of, and when we say in the world of course doesn't mean the world. The world means the area in which they were traveling. Because if there was conflict, if there was war, the concern might be that when she says he died, what she really means is what? Which means is what? He was mortally injured. He was mortally injured. And of course, under these circumstances, of course he's going to die. And therefore, we're concerned that her conjecture may in fact be false. Therefore, in order to be able to believe her words, we need A, peace in the marriage, and peace in the region in which they were visiting. So we'll stop over here. We'll pick up Emir Tzeh Hashem here tomorrow. Sava Rava.